leadership in cybersecurity isn't just about understanding threats. It's about leading a team to navigate them with confidence. At CPF Coaching LLC, we specialize in taking your leadership skills to the next level. With over 15 years in the cybersecurity field, we empower professionals and startups to reach unprecedented heights. Imagine having a personalized coaching experience tailored to your unique career ambitions. From strategic planning to masterful pitch and interview preparations, we're here to guide you through every challenge. Join us for our unique value proposition workshops or dive into our vibrant learning community for continuous skill advancement. Don't just be a part of the industry, redefine it.
Visit cpfcoaching.com for more information. Discover the leader within. Contact CPF Coaching LLC today and schedule your strategic session.
Hey, security peeps, we are live with another edition of Breaking Into Cybersecurity, the Hot Jobs Edition. I am Renee Small, cybersecurity super recruiter, helping awesome leaders hire great talent. And I'm here with the fabulous Steve Arin, who is the CTO, federal CTO of Intel. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Renee. How are you doing today?
I am great. We hanging out on a Friday afternoon. I feel like I should have a real drink. Like I have this thing here. I feel like Friday afternoon. It should be, this should be a little bit of a happy hour, so to speak. I told Steve, I know we were going to have a good time this afternoon because it is Friday afternoon and we are here talking about hot jobs. So Steve, as shared when we first chatted, I would love to hear about your, we typically start the podcast off by doing a couple things. One, folks that are here, please shout out and say where you're listening from, where you're viewing from. You know, we always love to see that, see who's in the chat. Two, Steve, before we get, I want you to kind of go over your career, like how you got to where you are, your leadership, you know, growing, your growth, and how we got, how you got to become CTO of Intel. And then we will jump into some questions about AI security, hot jobs, and all that other good stuff. So sounds good?
Sounds great.
Perfect. So I'll let you, I'll hand over the mic to you.
Well, thank you, Renee, and it's a pleasure to be here today. So as you asked, how did I get started in and how did I get to where I am today? It really began back in the mid to early 90s. After graduating and doing a little bit of graduate work, I sort of stumbled my way into a security startup in 95. Had the opportunity to get in on the ground floor in the very early days of the internet before Netscape went public and the internet was a common term. And really, we were looking at the time at providing better security for your desktop and got to hit the ball rolling, got the company up and running, developed the product, and really just architected a solution. And I think one of the things that really helped me throughout my career was looking at it from the perspective of the end user. We all know that cryptography can be complex, and the idea is, how do I make it simple? And so we focused on solutions that were geared towards making it easier for users to protect their data and protect their desktops and laptops. And from there, did several other security startups throughout the 90s and 2000s and across cybersecurity, but in different areas. And I thought that was really one of the interesting things about my early career was having the opportunity to look, in the first at edge or desktop and laptop security, client security. My next startup, Lockstar, focused on mainframe security and enterprise business, and really revolutionizing how you connect legacy systems to the internet in a secure fashion. From there, I got the opportunity to come out to California and be the CTO of an upcoming company called Sanctum that was revolutionizing this new thing called web at the time, and how do you do web security? And really took the helm of that sort of middle tier company and grew it to acquisition with an eye towards how do we get application security embedded into the development lifecycle process, and started looking at developers and how they adopt security early in the process. And that was one of the key innovations, was developing tools for the developer and quality assurance teams, whereas a lot of the security tools were more focused on IT and operations at that time. They did a startup in the XML security space that was later acquired by Intel. And that's how I came to Intel back in 2005. And at the time, it was interesting. I sort of did the transition and figured I'd go back and do another startup, you know, as you do when you're a serial entrepreneur. And the GM for the software team at that time, Renee James, came to me and said, "Steve, what do you want to do?" I says, "Well, I like being a CTO, but Intel already has one." And she says, "Well, I'm creating this new team that's going to focus on what we call pathfinding." And pathfinding in the Intel parlance is sort of that middle tier. If you think about research and the Intel labs focusing 5 to 10 years out horizon, and then the product teams are sort of delivering a product within the next 2 years, there was this gap that she had identified of what innovations can we do in software and firmware that sort of first, before the hardware gets it, to sort of bridge that gap. And she tapped me to lead the cybersecurity pathfinding team for Intel. Which was an exciting thing. So I basically got to play CTO, but with Intel's budget. And so that was really nice. And we did some amazing innovations in virtualization and cloud security, in next generation malware detection and malware prevention using hardware and software features. And did that for a number of years, you know, growing that team and that capability, delivering products to market. And then in 2013, Intel was looking to stand up a federal, really a business unit focused specifically on federal, on doing innovations with the public sector and the federal government. And so since I had been doing cybersecurity work all my career and working with the government, since they are a key adopter of security technologies and sometimes a leading adopter, they said, "Hey, Steve, we have this team that we want to form, and do you want to lead the team? It requires you to move back east." I'm like, I think I could do that. And so next thing I know, I'm moved back to the DC, Maryland area. And I'm the federal CTO for Intel. And for the past going on almost 10 years, have been driving technology innovations and working closely with our federal customers to adopt the technology, both of what's available today, but also how they can plan for the future capabilities. And then on the other side, translating government speak back into Intel speak, so our business units can build products that better meet those customer requirements, understanding them in terms that Intel can understand. And so really bridging that gap between those two worlds, and then developing innovations to help drive the technology and the industry forward. And so it's been an exciting time. And the cool thing about working at Intel is that our technology, you know, they say the old Amatica, Intel inside, it really is inside, in your laptops, in the network switches, in the cloud, in the edge. And so you have the opportunity to work on really cool technologies that span the gamut from high performance computing to edge sensing, you know, AI and security, and all these different domains. 5G are really exciting technologies, and the federal government as a customer really has just about every possible problem that you could identify. The Veterans Administration does healthcare, Defense Logistics does logistics and supply chain. So every part of the government is sort of a microcosm of the broader private sector industries. And so it's really a fascinating way to sort of touch a lot of technologies across a lot of different domains.
It must be. I mean, that sounds, first and foremost, that's an amazing journey. One of the things that I love about doing this live and podcast and breaking into cyber is that I hear so many different ways people have gotten to where they are. Yours is one of the most fascinating that I've heard, like the startups and being going back and forth. It's great. That sounds like if I were a mini CTO, the things that I would probably be doing going back and forth. It just sounds so, so exciting. And you're always doing something new, and it's always interesting and fun, and you're changing and pivoting and, you know, picking up on the newest technologies, being in the lab. I mean, so many pieces of what you just said, turning government speak to regular speak. I need a whole lesson in that. I feel like I should come work for you, you know, sit in the background in here, because sometimes it's so challenging. So I'm going to shout some people out before we get started with some of the questions and follow up and jumping into the, you know, the topic. So Gina King said, impressive. Chris Folon is said he was looking forward to this. Ricardo is here. Paul Cummings is here. Bianca is here. Patrick is listening from Temecula. Do you know this location? Because I said, where is that? And he said it's between LA, it looks like, San Diego and Vegas, like in that world. Pretty cool. Very, very cool. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Marcus. He's a 20-year cybersecurity professional, recently partnered with Genius to help develop bespoke cyber solutions for brands. Super excited to be here. We are super excited to have you. So anyone that has not shouted yourself out, please let us know where you are chiming in from. Steve is here to answer any and all questions. We're going to jump in and talk about what the topic of the day, which is AI security, because I want to learn all about that. So Steve, since you're one of the experts in this space, kick us off. Tell us about AI security. First, tell us how it works, then the kinds of skills people look for, because the thing about, you know, breaking into cyber, and like I shared with you, many of the folks have been in cyber, obviously looking to continue to grow their careers, pick up on the newest skill sets, you know, all of those good things. So please tell us more about what it is, what you're doing in the space, and we'll start from there.
So sounds good. And so Renee, I think the first thing to do is to define what is AI security. Yeah. And I like to look at it as two sides of the coin. So one is, how do we secure AI? And AI is becoming pervasive through all aspects of our lives, all aspects of enterprise and businesses across every sector, and having a direct impact. So the first side of the coin is, how do I secure and protect and trust the AIs that we're deploying, the data sets that they're trained on, the full life cycle, if you will? The flip side, especially in the cybersecurity domain, is, how do I use AI to enhance cybersecurity or to do a better job in cybersecurity? So one is, how do I secure AI? The other is, how do I use AI for security? And really, there's opportunities happening in both of those sides. And there is a cross-section of, how does AI better secure itself, and really, you know, how do you develop AIs that are better trustworthy? So there is a little bit of an overlap in that Venn diagram, but I think inside large corporations, the question they're all asking is, how do I secure my AI? A lot of focus is being done, you know, sort of in the industry and in regulations and others, talking about ethical use, which is a key aspect. But in order to have an ethical use of AI, you also have to trust the AI. In order to trust the AI, you have to build security in. So there are a lot of activities that need to happen. A lot of people right now focusing on sort of the final stage. So I've deployed my AI, how do I protect it from the injection and the poisoning attacks? That if you open up any cybersecurity news article in the last several months, there'll be lots of talk about different attacks on AI. There's actually a whole list of open source tools for fuzzing and testing AI against these kind of target attacks that can either lead to false information, forgetting and hallucinations, or extraction of IP from the AI if you know how to prompt and query the AI. But there's another aspect that often gets neglected because it's, I think, sometimes less sexy, is, how do I build a secure AI? How do I secure it from the very beginning? And when you look at AI, there's a whole lot of work that happens before you get to the cool generative AI, ChatGPT kind of use case. There's the data source and data generation, the labeling, the data curation wrangling, the governance models. There's the testing and tuning and optimization. There's a lot of work that goes into building a functioning AI. And then once you've deployed it, there's the feedback learning and the ongoing learning that continues to happen. So when we look at, how do we secure AI, we have to look at the holistic AI lifecycle. And some of the techniques aren't any new than what, any different than what we do to protect any application. Having proper security controls and CI/CD and agile the processes for making sure that we're verifying code, that we know where our the supply chain of our data sets, that we're able to make sure that there isn't malware or malicious content in the libraries that we're downloading. So a lot of the normal hygiene and best practices, but applied to AI. And one key piece of recommendation is documenting what's happening, whether it be digitally or in, you know, even in a spreadsheet, just keeping track of where what were the data sources, what tools were used to develop it, where did you get those tools, on what systems, who had access to the model while it was being tuned, so that you can do a verification downstream. Because once you have the AI model, you don't have much visibility into what built it. Once you've downloaded the data set, you often forget, you know, because you're off doing the next thing, where did that data set come from, at what moment in time? And so keeping track of the supply chain and the overall authenticity of those components is an important part of securing AI. And then just like any other enterprise application, when we deploy it into an environment, securing that environment, auditing that environment, doing continuous monitoring, applying zero trust principles to the application and deployment is equally important. From a hardware perspective, is verifying the hardware it's running on, not just the CPU or the server or the cloud infrastructure, but, you know, what accelerators are you using? What tools are you downloading onto those platforms? Really to provide a holistic approach to how do I trust AI? And so it's not a one and done, you know, I buy an AI security product and I'm finished. It's really about creating the right processes and procedures for developing an AI and then maintaining that security and checking it on a continuous basis. And so from a securing AI, that those are some really good stepping stones to how you get there. There's a lot that goes into, you know, protecting AI in real time, both from a protection from poisoning attacks, but also assessing, has your AI gone astray, if you will, especially in the generative AI domain. On the flip side, the idea of using AI for security is actually something that's very exciting. We've seen a lot of companies and product vendors adopt machine learning and analytics and AI tenants into their capabilities, whether it's scanning for malware better or detecting anomalous activity on the network. What we're starting to see is, you know, that go in scale and using AI to look at various aspects of my enterprise to be able to detect anomalies or to be able to do correlation of, well, we had an event here, how did they get in? And sort of looking at the data. And one of the places where AI can be really powerful is just the sheer volume of events and data that we have to process requires something more than just a cybersecurity team sitting at a SOC and looking at the blips on the, you know, on their dashboard. AI is an enabler to helping them parse through all that data, narrow down the scope to something that is manageable, and in many cases, identifying sort of what we call the easy stuff. Well, that's something we just need to patch with the latest CVE that can be automated, and then let the EDR team go after the, you know, the cyber events that are sort of nation state level that require that extra work. We're seeing a lot of work on the next generation of AI threat. So one example, we're seeing phishing schemes that are AI generated that are much more powerful than the sort of manual ones we saw before. They're much more real. They're targeted to individuals. There was a case in overseas not too long ago where a chatbot hooked up to a deepfake video trick somebody into transferring money out of an organization. So the question people ask, well, how do I combat that? Well, this is a good case of where both better training and better controls, but also AI can help you. How do you detect a deepfake? How do you detect the phishing scams that are being built and looking and being able to unpack those email messages before they get to the end user? And so we're seeing AI be applied not just to sort of the classic security stuff, but also how do we defend against these new AI threats that are coming after organizations, like advanced phishing schemes and deepfake based scams that we're seeing today.
Wow. I there's so much. Steve, I tell you, this is going to be good. There's so much happening, so much going on. Oh my goodness. Where do we begin? So first and foremost, a couple of greetings. Greetings, Fanta. AI DLC, was that the AI, what do you know what DLC stands for?
Patrick, can you tell us?
Yeah, Patrick, tell us what's AI DLC?
Development lifecycle, maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense. Fanta said, this is awesome info. Folks, please ask questions because I can suck up this whole entire time with Steve by myself because this is such fascinating information. So, Steve, I would say let's start with, oh my God, there were so many different pieces. So the one of the most recent where you said that you have these advanced phishing schemes and AI can help you determine, you know, like how that works. When a person, is there a lot of AI involved in on the right now in the corporations? So is it being used heavily from a corporate and you know, you talked a little bit about it enhancing security and what you're learning about, like, I guess, in the lab, so to speak, but is it in production right now?
So that's a really good question. The use cases around AI for security, we have a lot of security vendors using AI in their tools. You know, the major anti-malware detection vendors, the network firewall vendors have all started to adopt various aspects of AI to better recognize malicious behavior, stealthy attacks, be able to detect those low threshold anomalies. On the enterprise side, it's, you know, again, how do you parse that large volume of data that are, you know, being thrown at organizations with millions upon millions of attack attempts every day? So we are seeing AI in production being used sort of to tackle it from those two angles. We haven't seen a lot of the AI, you know, get out of the lab, if you will, for things like deepfake detection. There are some really good tools out there. Intel has a technology we open sourced and have a service around called Fake Catcher, which is another tool in your arsenal to be able to detect deepfake videos. But I think this is an emerging area of being able to detect generative AI. Whether it be video and imagery, or in the case of phishing scams, where they're generating fairly realistic phishing scams, trying to get you to click on the link. And sometimes it's don't click on the link, but that doesn't always work where the email looks like it's legitimate from, you know, a company you do business with or from your CFO. Because this is where looking at sort of the things behind the scenes. So what the users presented isn't the full story. The IT department and the email systems and the network infrastructure can help pick up on some of the anomalies of where that traffic came from. So an email from the CFO should come from the CFO's email account. You'd be able to correlate that email back to a send from that email. You should be able to detect if that email has changed between when he sent it or she sent it out and when it received. So there are techniques that can be implemented, but these are a little bit more advanced and takes a little bit more work to instrument your infrastructure to help detect against these next generation of threats. And I think this is where we'll see a lot of growth of understanding how the threat adversaries are using AI and applying the right tools, the right training, and the right technologies and processes to be able to help mitigate against these advanced threats. But as far as sort of the adoption of AI for security, I mean, there, you know, every one of the major antivirus vendors are already adopting some form of AI and machine learning in order to better detect, you know, the sheer volume of attacks. There are some interesting innovations in this space. I'll mention one that we've worked on called the threat detection technology, which specifically looks at the an application's runtime performance on a platform, on a CPU, and be able to model the ransomware behavior, if you will, is different from Microsoft Word or from your browser. And you can actually detect the operations of ransomware or clickjack or crypto mining malware because of the way it operates on a CPU. And you can't lie to the CPU. That's the beauty. You can lie to the OS. You can lie to the antivirus software. You can't lie to the actual processor you're running on. And so using AI, we can detect those heuristics. We can detect those models and then publish that to the antivirus vendors to give them another tool in their arsenal for detecting some of these really stealthy malware that are running on people's systems.
Yes, absolutely. So a couple questions that have come in. I want to go back to some of these that are here. Marcus wants to know, what are some of the elements that you think should take priority in securing AI that has been integrated within an enterprise? And then his follow-up question is, in what ways do you think AI can be used to hunt AI?
So those are two really good questions. Let's start with some of the building blocks. The first question, I think you have to look at it from two perspectives, and I'm going to key in on a couple of words that he used in his question. Once it's been integrated into the enterprise, once it's been deployed, you've missed several opportunities to help secure that AI. Now, there are absolutely things you should be doing to protect the AI in the environment that you've deployed it. Monitoring, being able to put in controls. If it's a enterprise application that you're supporting for the enterprise, make sure you have multi-factor authentication for those that can use it. Don't just open it up. This way you can control who has access to the AI. on the development side, and this is a really key thing, and most of the major tech companies have put out policies around this, make sure you're not, you know, especially in the large language models, on the open ones like the ChatGPTs and the Bards and so on, don't put corporate IP or trade secrets into your questions. Don't train it on those information, because it's very easy nowadays to extract that IP. There have been multiple examples of where the data that was trained on was internal, and it's an externally exposed large language model, and using prompt various queries, you can actually extract what that IP was. And so that is a key concern around how do you protect the use of that AI, using quality and hygiene on the infrastructure, verifying the security of it. One of the recommendations that we're seeing adopted for regulated and high security environments is providing confidential computing for the model itself. So when you deploy that model into your cloud or into your on-prem systems, it's protected from itself, and to protect people from being able to gain access to your model and change it or to do targeted attacks against the AI, as well as protecting what it tells you so that people can't change the input. I'll give you a simple example. If I have an AI that's doing object detection, detect if someone's breaking into my facility, and I'm, one of the things that someone, an adversary would want to do is either fake the AI by giving it false information to process, so nothing to see here, that's no human being standing there trying to pick the lock, or to poison the AI to forget what a human looks like. If I protect the AI itself in a secure container, I can prevent those kind of accesses that allows an adversary to learn how your AI model works or to send it false or replayed information. So that is one of the techniques on the integrated side of the camp. But also, again, it's making sure that you have proper controls on the life cycle. And that's why I want to talk a little bit about what happens before it gets into the enterprise in the development and in the tuning stages, is protecting that AI and having good visibility into what were the building blocks. There have been multiple bad examples of where AI was trained on a very limited data set. Probably the best example that's out there is a lot of the AIs for healthcare were trained on data sets that were collected from research studies. And a lot of those research studies were 18 to 25 year old white males that had nothing better to do but sign up and get full body scanned or give blood samples, which is great for that initial data set, but that when you apply that AI to the larger population, doesn't really help you for international or women or any other demographic. And so understanding what you built your AI with so that you make sure that it's providing the best information. And the same is gonna be true for enterprise use cases. Making sure you know the data sets and know how that data was curated is gonna go a long way to helping you deploy a trustworthy AI. Now, the follow-up question is, what are ways that AI can be used to hunt AI? Well, the best example is deepfake detection. So being able to use adversarial models to be able to detect deepfakes. And the other is we've seen, and there was a DARPA grant challenge around this, about how do I use an adversarial model for being able to detect malware that was generated using AI? And so, AI on AI violence, if you will. And so we've seen some really great examples of this. And I think this is an area that we'll continue to see cool research and innovative products coming out of how to detect AI that's being used in an adversarial way. One thing to be clear about is that the adversaries, the threat actors, are absolutely using AI. They are a multi-trillion dollar industry, and they're going to use every tool in their toolkit to be able to do better, to get better scale, to get more people to click on the links or to get more data in their data breaches. And so they're absolutely leveraging AI. We've seen examples of that. And so the question is how we as enterprise cybersecurity professionals can leverage those tools to our benefit and to be able to detect, like you said, detect AI that's being used against us.
AI on AI violence. Hilarious. AI is being used. I'm trying to figure out which user this is, but he says, or she says, AI is being used to create realistic phishing calls. And I know that from Ross Lazarowitz and Mirage Security.
So that is correct. We're seeing voicemail-based phishing calls where that's, and what was really interesting is it's not just a recorded call. These are chatbots. It is interactive. And when it's interactive, you can actually have a conversation, and you're not actually talking to a human. You're talking to an AI. So when you ask it questions like, hey, you know, like, where should I send the information to you? It will respond. It will respond to you like a chatbot would.
Crazy.
Now, there are some techniques that are being talked about in, you know, sort of in the open community about better ways of detecting if you're talking to a human. Sometimes it's putting in some random things into your questions to sort of see how it responds. On that video phishing call that I mentioned earlier, where the individual was tricked by a deep fake video and chatbot of their CFO, one suggestion that Gadi Evron put out there from Gnostic was raise your hand and ask the person on the other end to raise their hand. Now, the reason that's important is that most deep fakes are really good at, you know, creating a deep fake of the image you're actually seeing here. They're not as good as being able to deep fake my random hand movements on demand. And so it's something simple like that of just doing that extra verification to make sure you're talking to a real human being. Similarly, on these phishing calls, if you ask them a question like, you know, what's the capital of Minnesota, the AI will have that answer. Sometimes asking personal information or asking a random question and seeing how it responds. If, you know, if the AI says, well, I don't know what you're talking about, can you please restate? You know, it's a little bit. If it says, well, Steve, why are you asking me this weird question? You and I have known each other for 10 years. That's a more realistic answer. So those are the kinds of things you can do to help protect yourself. What's needed is going to be things to do to automate those processes. So it's not relying on the human or the end user to try to protect themselves, because A, we're asking a lot of our users, and B, as an enterprise or as an organization trying to protect secrets, we want to be able to put in controls long before a human has to make that decision.
Right. And it's Justin that's on here. Justin Merhoff, he says, or use a challenge and password or Army security control.
So yeah, that takes a little pre-work. So having a safe word that you can sort of say, hey, I want to verify it's you, verify verbally, never documented in a file that can be read by an AI. So that is, especially for really critical things like, you know, transferring $25 million out of your bank account, having a personally agreed upon sort of challenge response is an interesting approach. It doesn't scale well, but again, for the CFO and their chief financial analyst, that's a good recommendation for those kind of things, is to have that kind of verbal agreement between the two of you so that you can verify that. Just bear in mind that once you use it, if it's over a recorded line, eventually an AI could potentially capture that in a data breach. And so make sure that you regularly cycle those challenge and passwords.
It's crazy. It's like it never stops. And Justin says again, no, Marcus Wells, AI capture systems. So like an AI capture.
Yeah, unfortunately, capture systems are easily defeatable today by AI. But, you know, even with the, tell me all the parts of a bicycle, or, you know, can you read this word? I mean, the AIs have gotten so powerful that many capture systems really are just a sort of a bar nuisance to sort of raise the bar. They're not sort of able to mitigate against an AI-based attack or someone who knows that that's the capture you're using and it can basically train their AI on your capture system. Now, flipping it the other way, is there a way that AI can do a better job of capture? That's something to be determined. I'm sure there's security startups out there thinking about that right now.
Good. Right. I can imagine they are. So how do you think? So I think this was Justin's question as well. And thank you, Justin, for being here and asking such great questions. And thank you for Paul Cummings, my little brother. I call him, he always calls me big sister. So now he's little brother, for referring him, for sending him over here. So he wants to know, how do you think AI has changed automation? So let's start with that one.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. We're seeing a lot of activity here, especially on what we call the manual process. You know, there are a lot of manual paper-based processes across private and public sector. And AI is really helping to automate those problems. There are examples of using LLMs and RAG architectures to automate the consumption of those documents, you know, Excel spreadsheets, PDFs, even scans of paper-based documents, automating the ingestion of that information, and then automating the process of compliance checking, payment information, being able to extract the information and put it into a database. So we're seeing, and the timing is amazing here. We've seen examples of where it's a 6-month process to do, you know, sort of, you think about in construction or shipbuilding or any of these sort of long-term, long-scale, multi-vendor operations. Being able to have an AI go through and consume all that data and quickly populate the information to verify that it's in the right format, that you've, you know, literally little things like, have you filled in all the pieces of the form? Do you have all the right codes for the tools you're using? And populating that into the compliance system and then automate the process of approving that to move forward can go from 6 months to 18 minutes. And that's game changer when we look at automation, but, you know, as far as efficiency, time to market, and cost. And so we're seeing AI absolutely being used to automate manual and very heavy human-based processes. The idea is not to replace humans, just to be clear. It's about how do we make the human more efficient at doing what they actually want to do, which is build that building, not necessarily looking at, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages and reams of documents to verify that all the codes were aligned correctly. Inside the organizations, we're seeing AI being looked at of process efficiencies. One of the really interesting areas that machine learning and AI have been very variable in is looking at our existing processes that are being deployed, and it could be ERP applications, enterprise resource planning, logistics and supply chain, finance and capital budget allocations, to even simple things like the development lifecycle and quality assurance, and looking at ways that AI can automate key aspects of that those processes, or look for ways or recommendations for making them more efficient. So we're seeing a lot of examples of where AI is being looked at, not replacing an existing process, but looking at ways to make it more efficient, ways that we can save money, get faster time to market, or just reduce redundancies within an organization. One of the very first examples of the government using AI for this was the Air Force used an AI to look at their contracts management databases and their contracts infrastructure, and literally set it loose on that. And what they were able to identify is redundancies where they had multiple contracts for the same thing, as well as looking at the efficiency by which contracts move the process and reducing extra hops that could be captured earlier. And so the AI both identified redundancies, again, saving taxpayer dollars is a good thing, but also looked at ways that they could make the process for vendors going through that process more efficient and more and be able to ultimately at the end of the day, process more vendors through the system.
That's wild that there were multiple vendors that had, I mean, so many, taking something, a construction project from 6 months to 18 minutes, wild. And all these other things. It's so interesting. I mean, I play with very limited, you know, ChatGPT stuff, and it's fascinating to me. I mean, it's stuff that would take hours and hours, and it's like in 2 seconds.
I mean, one of my favorite examples recently is there's a little plugin tool for Teams that will take the transcription recording of a Teams meeting and create an executive summary, give you notes. And what I thought was the most important thing, it actually captured all the tasks that were assigned into who. I mean, you think about it, how many times do you have to go back and figure out, okay, what was I asked to do? What did I ask my team to do? And right. Plug that into a system. Now the AI can just read it, put it into key bullets, and if you want, automatically send it to the ticketing system. That saves time, energy, and also make sure I don't forget like half the tasks that I took in that meeting. These are all little tools are changing the way we do business. It's amazing the automation that they can help with.
So true. So true. And that, I guess, leads into this question. How can AI help people learn cybersecurity?
Well, that's an interesting one. How can AI help people learn cybersecurity? Interesting thing about that. So I think where AI can be helpful in learning cybersecurity is use the tools to help you get to the right information. There is a lot of information out there. And so some things may be simple as I want to understand how to deploy a secure network. And so things like ChatGPT can give you guidance. Again, it's not going to replace doing it and learning it. But I think one of the things that, like, you know, other sources of information in the past, it helps you quickly get to a starting point. I don't know if we've gotten to the point yet where AI is going to magically give us the right information at the right time that I need to, you know, to secure this firewall. But I think that there's a lot of things where AI can help augment the things you want to focus on, especially if you're looking at an area you've never dealt with before. So if you want to learn more about, you know, sort of communication security for back-end switching networks, you can go read a 500-page book, or you can maybe ask ChatGPT, hey, what are some of the key resources I need to learn about securing switching networks? and it will pull together information and give you a starting point. Again, it's not going to be 100%. You shouldn't just trust AI implicitly that's going to tell you everything you need to know. But just like Wikipedia does and other open source resources, it's a way to sort of distill information. One area where you are seeing some innovations, it's not specific to cybersecurity, but you know, at large companies, they have an LLM on their internal documents. And so they've trained on their hardware, you know, in our case, on specs and on documentation, on user guidance, software development kits, all the documentation you create. You know, large database companies may have an AI internally trained on all of their roadmaps, all their documents on the specs and on the tickets and on the knowledge bases. And what that allows you to do is you create your own little internal ChatGPT for your domain, so that you can quickly get to the question, the information. If a, you know, a customer comes in and say, hey, how do I configure this network card with this GPU on this server on this version? You can type that in and say, well, here's what we pulled in. And you can see here's the spec for how to do the configuration of the network card when talking to a GPU. So it gives you quicker access to information. But we're not yet at the point where you can sort of take an AI security academy, although that might be the future we're coming to.
I feel like that's coming. That's where we got it. That's where we're going to be soon enough. Wow. My podcast co-host, Chris Folon, how can we prepare the next generation of augmented intelligence in school and then at work?
So part of it is making it part of the curriculum. One of the things, when ChatGPT first came out, I was really concerned to see that universities were trying to ban it. Corporations were trying to ban it outright. And that's a mistake. I get it. There are cases where people can try to write their essays using ChatGPT. I almost want to think the complete opposite. Just like, you know, if you're taking an advanced math class, the professor, he builds the right test. He can let you take your textbook to the class because ultimately his questions are going to require you to think. And so I think the other is learning how to use these tools for the job you're trying to do. I think that's important. Again, you shouldn't be cheating and trying to get ChatGPT to write your essay or to solve all the calculus equations. But if you think about ways that the next generation can get better trained on these technologies is to actually use them, to get trained in how to use ChatGPT. But even more interesting, how would you build your own? So imagine, again, you're not going to have a trillion parameters, but building a localized language model, pulling down the data set, running PyTorch and R, getting your hands on these tools early so that you're familiar with them, so that when you get out into the workforce, you're already familiar with the tools, you're a leg up because the rest of the workforce is still trying to go back and learn these technologies. So I'm a big fan of let's get the universities, high schools, and everyone leveraging these technologies, playing with them. And then specifically, you know, in the cybersecurity domain, looking at using these tools against cyber data sets and looking at the sort of events and event correlation and saying, hey, I want to try to see if I can do a large language model to learn from, you know, 60 days of firewall logs and then put in an attack from open source and see what happens, see if my language model would catch it. Those kind of activities are great exercises, sort of hands-on practical labs for playing with these next generation tools and doing it in a safe space.
Exactly. I told my 12-year-old who wants more allowance, I said, you know what you're going to be doing? You're going to be using these tools. He was so excited about it. I was like, I need shorts. I need all kinds of different things. And I think you're so right. Like just getting your hands dirty because it's not going anywhere. It's only getting more and more and more massive. And I feel like people are, you know, some of the questions that we have gotten in the past is if it's going to take over your job and which jobs are, you know, will it take over? And the low-hanging fruit stuff, yeah, but it's the stuff that some other kind of automation would have taken over anyway. So next question. AI is successful because it uses optical character recognition, a common technology used for assistive technology like a screen reader solution.
And that's one example of machine learning applied to and we see a lot of the advanced techniques build off of natural language, natural language processing or NLP is one of the foundations of what these large language models do. And just to sort of lay it out, the LLMs, the generative AIs, a lot of what they're doing is they're doing a prediction of what's next. But before you ever get there, you're doing the language processing to first understand what the tokens are of that language to then do the cool stuff of detecting what it is you're really trying to ask, what's the information you're looking for. And so techniques that sort of started with optical character recognition, natural language processing, even sentiment analysis are building blocks that ultimately leverage by these language, large language models for doing their prediction and their generative approaches.
Yep. Okay, so down here, more questions. How do we use AI to help improve critical infrastructure manufacturing to become less dependent on international manufacturing?
Ooh, good question. So let's unpack that a little bit. So how can AI really improve critical infrastructure and manufacturing? A lot of it is about leveraging those tools to reduce inefficiencies, lower the cost for critical infrastructure. Being able to, think about critical infrastructure. Not only do you have to build the widget, whatever, the power station, the water treatment plant, the financial transaction systems, but you have to be able to do it with a high level of resiliency. And so one of the areas where AI can help with is trying to figure is being able to do that resiliency testing, that resiliency validation, using AI to help predict when something will fail or what conditions will be needed to, in order to cause the failures, is a way to help improve the critical infrastructure and the manufacturing processes that go into it. We don't often, one example is aging. It's not like you can wait 50 years to see if a bolt will fail. But using machine learning and AI tools, along with some large data sets, can help you predict when a tool or a bolt, in this case, would fail, so that you can provide better guidance for the building of that infrastructure. And as we adopt these AI tools and make our critical infrastructure, our manufacturing processes more scalable, more cost efficient, it allows, if you're looking at sort of the international, domestic conversation, domestic capabilities will ultimately be able to achieve those levels of scale and cost efficiencies that can compete on any global market.
Such a good point. And then how do we use AI to help improve? He already said that. Okay. Lou says, great information. Is someone transitioning to cybersecurity, what types of certifications, degrees, professional development should we look into for AI cyber in the process of getting security plus, and she's starting her master's soon?
So that's a really good question. In the security domain, probably the most common one everyone knows is CISSP, which is, sort of the practitioner certification for IT security professionals. And it's a great one. It's one of those sort of building blocks. But when we're looking at AI for cyber, I think we'll start to see some of the coursework add in an AI component. I think it's still a little new as far as having an A plus for cyber AI cyber or the certified ethical AI hacker, although I'm sure it's coming. Some of the way to get information is look to the conferences that have AI tracks or AI topics. This past summer, DEF CON had an entire AI security village, and you can go get those papers that were published and you can listen to the talks that are published. And there's multiple different conferences out there. Conference for Defense is at a YouTube channel, and there are multiple AI talks at that conference. It's ACOD is the name of the conference. And there are many conferences that will have either AI tracks or AI talks. And that's an easy way to sort of get on what's current research in AI and cybersecurity. And then I go back to the last thing I said, Luz, get your hands dirty, play with the tools. You'll find that in the cybersecurity domains, those that understand how these tools work can leverage, PyTorch or TensorFlow and use them, are going to give you a leg up when you get into the workforce and you're presented with, hey, we've got this, database of events. There are about a trillion of them, and you've got to find the needle in the haystack. Well, having an AI tool in your back pocket or being familiar with how to pull in the right tools to help solve that answer is going to give you an absolute leg up on the traditional cyber professionals that are still trying to figure out what these tools mean.
Such a good point. I mean, I think about the young people who are in season, people who are transitioning, who need to learn all these things. And it really goes back to, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, one other thing that I've used throughout my career that is helpful, even when you're looking to transition, is surround yourself with people smarter than yourself. And I think, in the case of AI and cybersecurity, if you're a cybersecurity person and you're transitioning, or you're an AI person wanting to get people from those different domains. I have AI experts on my team who are not security professionals, but they are experts in these AI technologies. Number one, they can help you understand these technologies and get meaningful conversations going. But also they're thinking and they're talking to their peers. So you're going to hear what's coming next. One of the things I thought was really cool is about 6 months before ChatGPT became national news, I had two of my AI experts come to me and say, "Hey, Steve, there's this thing coming. It's called Transformers. They're really interesting. You should understand what they do. And let me show you how this works." And so they sat down with me and showed me how an AI transformer works. Well, ChatGPT, the T in ChatGPT is transformer. That's what they were talking about long before it became the big thing that we all know today. So these researchers are out there hearing and looking and researching the next generation. So whatever the next big wave is, they're going to be tapped into. Just like us in the cybersecurity domain, we know about what the cool next threat or what the next adversary is going to do because we're out there researching and living it, bringing our expertise to the AI folks so they know what's coming. And so that cross-domain collaboration is a powerful tool for anyone, both early in their career as well as late stage, to keep abreast of the ever-changing environment.
Yes. So important to do that. It is so very important. Okay, my buddy Niamdi says, "I think an interesting area of security is actually securing the ML operations pipeline, similar to what DevSecOps did for traditional software development. He's currently researching this topic and wants to know your thoughts on it."
Yay, verily. Absolutely.
You talked a little bit about that in the beginning. Yes.
So yeah. The development of the AI is where a lot of the problems will run into. And it's one of the opportunities to secure the AI from the get-go. So do we need to have an AI flavor of DevSecOps or just apply DevSecOps to AI? And actually, if you think about how AI is built, once you get out of the, there's a lot of iterative processes there, that, especially in the tuning and testing and optimization phases. And so it's ripe for the kind of, agile flows of DevSecOps and CI/CD of continuous update, continuous enhancement. And so I think absolutely applying DevSecOps to the machine learning operations pipeline, to the AI development lifecycle, is critical for us to be able to get to better trustworthy AI. The thing to understand is that your typical AI developer isn't your Python or C developer of old. Oftentimes, their level of language is R or Python at best. And so understanding that their world is a little different. They deal a lot more in data and mathematical algorithms and less about memory structures. But I think absolutely the concept of a DevSecOps pipeline for machine learning and AI is critical for us to be able to build trustworthy AIs and to secure these assets that we're deploying into our enterprise. So definitely continue that research because that is going to be a hot topic.
Yeah, he's my friend too. So when the research takes off and he gets that money. Steve, we're at the 50-minute mark. Folks, if you have any more questions, now is the time because, Steve, we have about 8 more minutes of Steve. Steve, this has been absolutely fascinating. Fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for coming on. Let's talk very quickly if any other questions are coming in. Let's talk about hot jobs. So I know part of this series that we're doing is hot jobs. I mean, AI security is so, so fascinating. I knew it was going to suck up the majority of the time. And we talked a little bit about how did you end up with these people in the lab that you hired that were AI experts? What kinds of skill sets do you need for, the hottest jobs and what hot jobs are out there? And if you still have roles, what are they? So we'll take the last couple minutes to talk about that.
Sure. So it goes back to something I said a few minutes ago, which is having a diverse domains represented within your organization. Going and providing opportunities for people who are currently in other roles to come work on cybersecurity or work on federal government opportunities. In the case of my AI expert, she was doing performance analysis of AI. Now she's doing AI solutions for federal government and taking her experience of how AIs can be deployed at scale and applying it to a real-world problem of deploying it at scale for customers or how to help them do that. Looking at having diverse thought in terms of creating the right solutions, both from the end customer perspective, but also understanding their different ways of coming at the problem. So I think one of the key things is when you're looking to hire folks is to make sure you have people representing multiple domains, multiple thoughts, multiple backgrounds. Diversity across all aspects is critical to solving some of these next generation challenges. and being able to think a little bit outside the box by having multiple outside boxes on the team. Specifically, you know, when we think about AI security, I think the some of the key skill sets, like I said, having familiarity with the technologies. Not everyone needs an algorithmic researcher that's building new models from scratch, although they're cool. But a lot of it is the applied AI. How do I leverage AI and use it in practical ways? How do I look at a process or look at a problem set and deconstruct it into where AI can be applied? Because it's not like you can take AI and sprinkle AI pixie dust all over a problem and magic, I have AI. You have to really understand the questions you're trying to ask. And to do that, you need to understand the business process, understand the technical workflow, and then figure out the right way to apply it. So I think that's one of the key areas of building a robust team is understanding what you're trying to solve. I am actually still hiring. I have an open position right now for a platform security architect. So someone who understands how hardware and software and firmware work together from a security perspective and how they fall apart as well, and be able to do some of that deep assurance analysis of various platforms. So networking, cloud, server infrastructure. So absolutely, if you want to learn, go to jobs at .intel.com and search for the federal public solution architect. I'm sorry, senior solution architect under the federal team. I'm hiring right now. So if anyone is interested in applying to that role, please go to jobs.intel.com. But there are lots of jobs out there you should be looking at, both in the cyber domain and in the AI domain. And having an AI person with some cybersecurity experience or a cyber person with AI experience is going to give you a leg up on the you know, in the case of the job market, a competition that doesn't, that only has that one domain.
Exactly. And if anybody that's on this live stream or on this podcast applies, let them know that you heard about it on the Breaking Into Cybersecurity Hot Jobs live stream. Okay, folks. All right, so one last question. What part do you feel identity security will play in securing enterprise AI?
So that's a good question. Identity, I'm gonna broaden the definition of it. Identity, there's obviously the need for authentication to use enterprise AI solutions to make sure you're providing proper access controls and multi-factor authentication. So that's the simple answer. The more interesting answer is when we think about the zero trust world, where my identity is more than just me, Steve Oren, with a set of credentials that I'm using to authenticate myself. It's me, where I'm coming from physically, what device am I connecting from, what network am I connecting from, what am I trying to access, what transaction resource am I trying to leverage at this moment in time against what kind of threats. And when you put that all together, that is a complex credential that needs to be evaluated against the risk posture. Here's a place where AI and identity can come together to provide a qualifier or an authorization that's based not on an individual, but on the context and the what's going on at that moment in time and what am I trying to do in the context of the overall risk posture. Those are some opportunities where AI can actually help with providing better identity access control by augmenting the standard credentials. But to go back to the original question, I think, again, using strong authentication for accessing, especially corporate AI services that are internal, that have IP behind them, is absolutely critical in order to make sure that you're properly controlling the use and preventing the abuse of your enterprise AI solutions.
Thank you for that. And thank you so much for your question. Steve, we are almost at 60 minutes, so I want to give you the last couple minutes to share any final words of wisdom. You know, most of the folks here are either trying to break into security or already in their roles. You know, this is such a new emerging technology, and to hear your expertise and get this information directly from you has been invaluable. I've learned 60 minutes of brand new stuff today, and I am geeking out myself. So any final words before we wrap up?
So I'd reiterate a couple of things. Number one is surround yourself with a diverse group that can give you the information you need that can help attack the problem from multiple angles. And then the other is get your hands dirty. Go play with the technologies, learn the technologies. There's lots of open source tools and freely available LLMs to go play with. Go out there and play with them. Pull them down onto your system and get your hands dirty with them. Similar to the recommendation I give to someone who's trying to break into security, download something like Kali Linux and start playing with the attacks. Get, you know, figure out how this stuff works. is a really good way to sort of come familiar with the technologies that you're not going to see in any certification course or any book or online resources. You actually go in and trying it. And so I would say go play with the technologies, get them adopted and see how they can help and how they can be part of your arsenal that you bring to bear in your daily jobs.
Sweet. Well, Steve, this has been fantastic. I feel like you have to come back because in 6 months, you're just going to be it's going to be more and more and more. So you're going to have to come back. I'm saying it on live so people know and I can hold you to it.
Absolutely, Renee. It'd be my pleasure.
Thank you so much, security peeps and future AI peeps, current AI peeps, all of you technology peeps. Thank you so much for being here. And the thank yous are coming in. You know, thank you so much. We really appreciate you, Steve, coming on and talking about this. And security peeps, more hot jobs next week. So stay tuned and have a great weekend. And we will see you next time.
Yes, thank you. Bye, and everybody. Thanks for all the great questions.
In the rapidly evolving world of cybersecurity, your business needs a guide that's as dynamic as the threats you face. CPF Coaching LLC delivers unparalleled expertise to elevate your cybersecurity startup or business. With a decade and a half of specialized experience, we're not just advisors, we're your strategic partners in growth and risk mitigation. Our tailored advisory services range from immediate hourly guidance to comprehensive 3 or 6 month packages, all supported with encrypted messaging for real-time assistance. For more information, cpfcoaching.com is your destination. Forge a path to success and distinction in the cybersecurity landscape. Connect with CPF Coaching LLC today and secure your business's future.